supporting honorable members, also to welcome to the Department of Social Development, the delegation led by the country, and then also to SAPA, the South African Social Security Agency, the delegation led by Mr. Stephen Mekwane. All of you are very welcome. Honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, this is the first meeting of the Portfolio Committee of Social Development of the Fourth Parliament of South Africa, and we are here today to consider vote number 16. Now, you all have a document that says draft program. And I also pose this question to the honourable member whether you have anything to add to this program. You may proceed. Objection to the program? Members accept the program? Thank you. Since this is the fourth parliament and 100% of the committee are new members, or should I say 99%, we're going to ask the members, the honourable members, just to introduce themselves. So I'll start with the members on my list.
Nomathemba November from the Northern Cape, and I'm from the ASP component.
I'm Patricia Adams, I'm from the ANC and also from the North State.
I'm Gadru Sal, ANC from the Northern Cape.
I'm Mrs. Chuera Elzalishiva from Limpopo Province.
I am Matanda Helen Matuba from the IFP.
I'm Patricia Kopani from Free State Province. I'm representing Democratic Alliance.
Morning to everybody. Helen Mula, Western Cape here.
Thank you very much, honourable members. Lastly, but not least, the chairperson, I'm Yolanda Porter, the chairperson of this portfolio committee, and I represent the ANC, the parliament, and the parliament. So you can see that in terms of the Northern Cape, we are quite well represented in the committee. You can see that also from, we have one member that's male, that has a, I'm not sure if he has a right or not, but it is a female-dominated committee, which actually tells you that social development is a very important issue for us as women, but also the role that it plays in terms of without social development, there can be no economic development. Nothing can happen in society if you don't have social development. And I think that is why women are feeling strongly about that. So I'm sure that as the majority of female representatives in this committee, we are going to do a lot of sessions and of education. Thank you very much. Any apologies? Secretary?
Yes, there is one apology from Mr. Khanyako of the UDF.
Thank you very much. But we have a question for you to see. Now, for over 2.1.4 on our agenda, and that will be the introduction of the delegation. And I'll start with the Director General of Social Development, who is going to introduce his team to us that is here today.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. my name is Bosco Matansela, Director General of the Department of Social Development. Seeing that we have quite a formidable team here present today, not everybody will have the opportunity to speak. So they are introducing themselves might just be the only opportunity they have. And if I took that away, they would have come to Cape Town only to this. So at least they can have the opportunity to say something.
Chair, my name is Zain Dangle. I'm the Chief Operations Officer in the National Department of Social Development.
Morning, Honourable Chair Members. My name is Wea Lantlapo, and I'm the Deputy Ambassador from the National Department of Social Development.
Good morning. My name is Tota Opalate. I'm the Chief Financial Officer in the National Department.
Good morning, my name is Jess Greatwich, and I'm here with Black Sash Organization.
I'm Shaheen, I'm also here with the Black Sash.
I'm Tavi, I'm also here with Black Sash.
Good morning, Chenda, I'm the member of the Real Gaze, as the Chief Information Officer of the Sahara.
My name is Vakasha Ramukopa, the Chief Director Monitoring and Evaluation.
Good morning, I'm Lisa Lamukamu. I'm responsible for intergovernmental coordination.
Good morning, my name is Kabura Kuloti. I'm a Chief Director of Social Assistance.
Good morning, I'm Roger Kachuan, Director of Strategy.
Good morning. My name is Mulungo Nelan, Chief Director of Strategy.
Good morning. My name is Brenda Kunwane. I'm the Chief Director for Social Insurance in the Department of Social Development.
If we could proceed, Madam Chairperson, I'm Cecilia Makiwane, the CEO of SASA.
Good morning, I'm Komso Cepularo, acting COO in the SASA.
Good morning, I'm Therese Small, the Parliamentary Officer for SASA.
Good morning, my name is Candice Banyani, the Executive Manager of Social Income, Audit and Risk Management.
Good morning, my name is Jerry Reese, and I'm the Executive Manager for Parkin.
Good morning, my name is Colette Lomagwili, responsible for SASA Management.
Good morning, my name is Dr. Edward Chauka, I'm the Acting Regional Executive Manager in the UK.
Good morning, I'm Sakum Ziawa, the Executive Manager for the UK.
Good morning, my name is Ntlantla Dangiti, Regional Executive Manager for KwaZulu-Natal.
Morning, Chair. My name is Gerald Roberts, and I'm from the Free State Regional Executive Manager.
morning, Chairperson. I'm Valdi de Plans, the Regional Executive Manager for SASSA and the Western Cape.
Good morning, honourable members. I'm Roger Govender, General Manager, Strategic Planning.
Good morning. My name is Mofat Mukhan, Executive Manager in Mpumalanga.
And the team for that introduction. I'm sure that after the meeting you will exchange business cards with the honourable members so they can get to know you. The honourable members, very important person is joined by the Deputy Minister of Social Development has arrived as we were doing the introduction. So I would like to take the opportunity to welcome you to this meeting. Madam Deputy Minister, we really appreciate your presence today. It's quite an honour for us that you have joined us. And we look forward to having a very, very good working relationship with you in October. If you look around in terms of the honourable members, I'm sure that you can talk to you when you have a little break. It's a female-dominated committee, and I believe the fact that we are all in this committee means we share your passion with regards to social development. Thank you very much for joining us. Honourable members, we start off with a presentation of the National Department of Social Development, and since the Deputy Minister has joined us, I don't know whether she open the presentation and she make an introductory remark, or would you rather engage us with the questions and comments later under the Deputy Minister?
Oh, thank you, Chairperson. I really have nothing to say right now. I just want to say that the minister will be with us tomorrow because today they are busy and because she wants to come and introduce us to the community and also commit ourselves to working together into a portfolio committee in ensuring that we improve the quality of life of our people. And yeah, the DG will take over and introduce the thing. Thank you.
Over to you, DG.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Perhaps I should take this opportunity to congratulate all the honourable members here present for their appointment to this committee, and for the detailed commitment. I'm certain that at the appropriate time, when the minister is here tomorrow, she will do so on our behalf. I'm now happy to present to the Portfolio Committee on Social Development our strategic plan for the year, which relates to the work that we'll be doing in the course of this year. May I say that our presentation consists of three parts, which will be presented by a relay team of three members of the Department of Social Development. The structure of it, part one will deal with the strategic overview, which I will share together with the Chief Operation Officer of the Department. And the last part will be dealt with by the Chief Finance Officer of the Department, which deals with the budget overview. In general, we will cover the department's overview that encompasses the vision, mission, mandate, and strategic priorities, as well as highlight key achievements, challenges, and priority areas over the medium term. And thereafter, provide a detailed budget that supports the implementation of the plan. the strategic trust of the Department of Social Development consists of a vision which pursues a caring and integrated system of social development services that facilitates human development and improves the quality of life. Our mission is to enable the poor, the vulnerable, and the excluded within South African society to secure a better life for themselves, in particular with them and with all those who are committed to building a caring society. Our key mandate is, as a department, is to provide sector-wide national leadership in social development by developing and implementing programs for the eradication of poverty and social protection and development amongst the poorest of the poor and most vulnerable and marginalized in our society. In pursuance of this, there are instruments that are available to us in the form of legislation. There's a list of pieces of legislation that the Department of Social Development is responsible for. And you will see in the list, we give you pieces of legislation which have since been repealed and the new pieces of legislation that have replaced them. In the case of the Aged Persons Act, which was passed in 1967, we have since passed the Older Persons Act in 2006, which takes into account the Madrid Plan of Action on Aging. We have the Fundraising Act of 1978, and they say in this regard that the very small part of that act that still remains in operation. The bulk of it has been moved into various parts of other new pieces of legislation. The Social Service Professions Act of 1978 remains. The Child Care Act of 1983 has since been replaced by the Children's Act of 2005. What distinguishes the old act from the new is the fact that the new act takes into account new constitutional obligations, including the international covenant relating to the rights of children. The Prevention and Treatment of Drug Dependency Act of 1992, the Social Assistance Act of 1992, which has since been substituted by the Social Assistance Act of 2004. But we also have the Welfare Laws Amendment Act of 1997. The Non-Profit Organizations Act of 1997, which has taken a large chunk of the Fundraising Act that I've referred to earlier on. We're also responsible for the National Development Agency Act of 1998, the Advisory Board on Social Development Act of 2001. We also have the South African Social Security Agency Act of 2000. I can see that we didn't put the year, but I think it's 2004. We also have responsibilities under the Domestic Violence Act. And there are two papers, white papers, that continue to guide our work. The one is the white paper on social welfare, which was developed in 1997, as well as the White Paper on Population Policy for South Africa, which was developed in 1998. The next few slides speak to the structure of the department. I must apologize for those who are relying entirely on what is on the slide, if they can read that. But this is essentially the top part. Deals with the executive structure of the department, the ministry, which will include the office of the deputy minister, under which will be the office of the director general and the supporting structures. And just underneath the Director General would be the seven branches of the Department of Social Development. Branches are those units that are led by deputy directors general. We have branch strategy and governance, which is led by the chief operations officer. Then we have the branch finance management led by the CFO. The branch corporate services, which has a vacant position of deputy director general there. We have the social policy branch, which is led by GDG, and we also have the branch comprehensive social security, which is led by GDG, branch integrated development, which is led by GDG, as well as branch welfare services, which is also led by GDG. So under these, those would be chief directorates that relate to a specific function that form part of the overall work obligations of the Deputy Director General responsible. And linked to the chief directors would be directors who also form part of the senior management service, and under those would be deputy directors and assistant directors and levels up to the lowest entry level into the public service. Those would fall underneath the sections that I've referred to. The top structure of the department, starting from DDG and moving up, essentially would be responsible for the development of strategy and the management thereof, fostering operational efficiency through improved alignment between the mandate, the strategies, the institutional capacity, oversight responsibilities we have in respect of the entities associated with the Department of Social Development, as well as specific boards that are associated with the work of the Department of Social Development. But also that at that level, we would be responsible for coordinating our monitoring and evaluation responsibilities across the sector of social development. The structures relating to finance management and corporate services, these would provide policy and strategic direction and matters relating to financial management and corporate services in the department, guided by the overall political leadership of the minister and the deputy minister. In the area of social policy, this is where guidance on social policy development, coordination, and evaluation is being done based on evidence-based policymaking approaches. Our branch, Comprehensive Social Security, is responsible for the development of policies and programs to provide income support to children, the elderly, the disabled, households in distress through social assistance and policies that mandate employed persons to contribute to social insurance. The last bit on social insurance is essentially a new area of work for the entirety of South African society, in that we don't as yet have a mandatory scheme of social insurance, but you will hear more about the detailed work that we are doing in this area of our work. In the area of integrated development, the department aims to develop programs and provide support for the implementation of appropriate policies, strategies, and tools to improve service delivery and strengthen the capacity of communities and vulnerable groups to sustain and improve their livelihoods. In the area of welfare services, what we focus on is policy development, review and implementation support for welfare services, create an enabling environment for delivery and accessibility of integrated social welfare services in partnership with all relevant stakeholders. In this area, you will hear more about the close working relationship we have struck with non-governmental organizations which render specific services on behalf of the department. In the program management office, there is a specific project that we are currently undertaking, the establishment of key social security institutions. These spring out of the 2004 Social Assistance Act, which calls for the creation of an inspectorate, as well as an appeals tribunal to adjudicate social assistance appeals emanating from grant applications which have been turned down by the Balkan Social Security Agency. As a Department of Social Development, we are part of a sector known as the social development sector. That sector would include statutory bodies, would include bodies such as the board of the National Development Agency, would include ourselves as a third layer, would be the National Department on the left. As you can see, the South Africa Social Security Agency is part of the sector. The National Development Agency itself is part of that sector. From the department side, we have 9 provincial departments that are associated with us. As honorable members will know, provincial departments are in a different sphere of government, which means that there is no reporting line between the heads of departments in the provinces and the director general of the network department. But as you will know, I'm sure, we are neither a federal nor a unitary state, but rather a system of corporate governance. So that is the nature of the relationship we have between the national department and the 9 provincial departments. Under those 9 provincial departments, there's a sizable number of districts which cascades down to service points at community level. On the side of the agencies associated with social development, we have 9 SASA regions. They are called regions because SASA is a national entity. So there's no attempt to change the nomenclature set out in the constitution relating to provinces. Similarly, the National Development Agency has got regional structures throughout the various provinces of the country. And these structures cascade to service points at community level. So this sector says that we actually have strategic linkages between the national departments as well as together with the provincial departments, as well as the linkages with the agencies that are associated with the departments. SASA is a Schedule 3A public entity, which is responsible for the administration and payment of social grants. Schedule 3A of the Public Finance Management Act means that it is a distinct body from the national department, with a separate accounting officer, or in this instance, an accountable authority. Similarly, the National Development Agency is a Schedule 3A. The primary mandate of the NDA being to contribute towards the eradication of poverty and its causes by granting funds to civil society organizations for the purpose of carrying out projects or programs aimed at meeting development needs of poor communities and strengthening the institutional capacity of other civil society organizations involved in direct service provision to poor communities. The Department of Social Development becomes a key representative of the social development sector, which includes the agencies that I've referred to, SASA and the NDA, in what is called the cluster system of government. There are seven clusters in government in the new term, and we are key players in a cluster called, and it's unfortunate that the slide on the cluster is not projected, but I thought I should speak to it, albeit that it's not projected as yet. But I'm hoping that the hard copies that have been distributed will include that slide. If not yet, it will be updated. We are key players in a cluster called Social Protection and Community Development. In that cluster, we are co-chairs together with the Department of Human Settlements. But we are also key players in other clusters, such as the cluster on security and crime prevention, called JCPS. Through our social crime prevention initiative. We are also key players in the governance and administration cluster because we are all part of government responsible for the improvement of good governance in government. Those would be essentially the primary clusters in which we are key. But we also participate in other clusters, such as one on economic development, because we believe that social development is much more than about giving aid. It's also about creating opportunities, and that's where we play a very important role. So if you permit me, Madam Chair, I would like to hand over the baton to the next colleague of mine, Mr. Dango, to take us through the substantive method of the program.
I want to request that you speak to the presentation instead of going slide by slide. I would like to finish with social development by 11, because we have 2 hours left of process. What we are going to do after the meeting is we all going to have specific members to submit questions for the same reply, which we will then be able to consider responses in our committee that we're going to have on June 32. So there will be more than ample opportunity for members to raise questions and concerns in that. Is that fine, please?
Thanks, Jeff. I'll try to be as quick as possible. In terms of the thematic areas, which is essentially also the key strategic priorities for the department over the next year, which we've taken over the medium-term framework, is tackling child poverty, tackling adult and older persons poverty, promoting social cohesion, in our case particularly around the area of substance abuse as a key area of focus, youth development, sector capacity building, governance, institutional development, and regional international solidarity. I'm going to skip this slide, but I'm sure, because I'm going to try and focus in terms of the key result areas in terms of the sector priorities. In terms of our annual performance targets, and just to say that those seven key thematic areas are translated into certain annual performance targets in terms of various programs. In terms of comprehensive social security, then what we aim to achieve is to reduce poverty, vulnerability, and risk exposure through social assistance and social insurance measures aimed at protecting older people against life cycle hazards and shocks affecting their livelihoods. So it's both social assistance and social insurance in a nutshell. We also then have certain institutional issues related to that, one of which is to improve the tribunal effectiveness and efficiency. The third area is to develop a comprehensive appeals framework, as that is currently causing significant backlogs, but also exposing us to the risk of litigation and the huge cost to the department if we don't do that, and to review and propose reforms
of social security legislation pertaining to appeals services. So in a very condensed format, that is the annual performance target in relation to programs of social security. In relation to welfare services, we aim to improve welfare service delivery by developing, piloting, and implementing norms and standards for delivering social welfare services by 2009 and 10. Just to give the government a sense, is that the national department's primary responsibility is to actually develop policy and develop programs, and then to work through the provinces and NGOs, which is what they need to try to sketch out in terms of the social sector. So we've got a constant role in actually improving services through that. We also seek to reduce substance abuse by developing regulations for substance abuse in this financial year, now that the Act has passed. We need to transform services to older people by developing service delivery guidelines and protect and promote the rights of people with disabilities by facilitating and developing policies and strategies. So as you can see, in terms of welfare services, it's policy development and program development and finding the kind of services that the provinces and NGOs must implement and then monitor that at the national department. We seek to improve the protection and care of children by facilitating the implementation of the Children's Act. We seek to empower families by developing an integrated plan for implementing the family policy. Again, a directive from Cabinet in regard to that is we need to actually look at this as a policy that gives guidance to the whole of government in terms of the role that the families play and services related to that. Protect people affected by violence and crime by developing a shelter strategy and help with an environment policy. Again, we work through the criminal justice sector cluster to implement that. The partnership of justice is very important. Jim went through the very fast, so you're stopping something too fast. In terms of community development, we seek to protect and empower the vulnerable youth by auditing youth services and also to strengthen the capacity of practitioners and communities to achieve sustainable livelihood by completing and launching the Sustainable Livelihood Toolkit by March 2010. We have a very important initiative in terms of improving community food security by developing a concept document on community food banks. And here we're working very closely with in partnerships with civil society and international and South African food banking association and institutions and the Department of Agriculture. Improving community development practice by developing a national community development framework that looks at professionalization and skills development for that particular cohort of workers. Community development is responsible for the implementation of the Nonprofit Organizations Act. Essentially, there we need to ensure the efficiency in the nonprofit organization registration, given the volume of nonprofit organizations that register with the department, but also to improve our reporting on organizations that comply in terms of functioning and accountability. We also seek to reduce vulnerability to HIV infections and mitigate the impact by developing guidelines to promote behavior change and norms and standards. The strategy and government's performance target is essentially just to ensure that a range of corporate services and strategic frameworks are strengthened to guide and assist the organization in implementing its core work across the sector. So I'm going to go through the details of all of those. It is quite a lengthy target. It's important in that under this area, we also take responsibility for the implementation of the White Paper on population development. So it's a core key performance area, so we seek to integrate population trends and dynamics into the department's planning by developing the 5-year population development strategy. And this includes working very closely with provinces. And I'm going to not do the areas and key achievements at this stage. Perhaps we could use the CFO a chance to present on the finances, and then we can do this time for next key achievements and challenges after that.
Thank you, Chief person. I'll try to be as brief as possible, Chair. I guess this is the most important part, given a lot of work that we're planning to do. I guess most of the members are asking where the money is to do all this work. The Minister, Chair, I guess we are also affected by the global economic meltdown. We do have some budget, however, it's never enough. But what I've done is to take you through on the past performance in terms of budget, and then also just indicate the allocation that we have for the current financial year. And the last few slides are just showing where we are currently in terms of spending. We have been spending a sizable amount of our budget over the last 3 years. We have been spending not less than 98% of our budget. As you can see, last financial year we had been allocated 76.5 billion rand. The bulk of that is for social assistance, which is the transfer, cash transfer that we disperse to households through the agency. A total amount of 76.096 billion was spent, the bulk of which, of the remaining amount, again, is the money that was not spent on social grants. It's an area we have improved a lot in terms of our financial modeling and forecasting, because it's usually not easy, especially last year we had policy shifts. Amongst others was the age equalization for men to get grants at 6 years. It's a phasing in process. We also had the extension of the child support grant to 15-year-olds. So we believe that we've managed to only underspend by 451 million out of 75.8 billion, which we believe was very critical. The other two programs, I won't speak a lot about Program 1 and Program 5. It's Program 3 and 4. And those amounts that you see there is mainly transfers that we did not release, but we have asked for a rollover from Treasury. The reason we didn't release those, we had problems with some of the organizations that we're funding. One organization had serious internal problems, and it was in the process of being dissolved. The other one, I think it was a question of non-compliance before we could transfer the funding. I want to go through to the next slide. All right, that social assistance transfers, as I indicated, is just the outcome. Next slide. I think let's just move on. All right, I've spoken to this one already. I just want to go to the allocation. Oh, okay, let me speak to this one quickly. One of the challenges we have, Chairperson and members, this year is that the effect of year-on-year rollover of commitment is catching up with us. We've been making our a call through the National Treasury in terms of our bidding process. But because of competing priorities, we've been funded only on major programs or projects like the social assistance. Some of the work that Mr. Rango referred to, for instance, the monitoring and evaluation, the projects that relate to support the implementation of key pieces of legislation, is a little bit suffering as a result of those competing priorities. We can see in 2006-07 we had 27.06 commitments that were to be the first bite on our new budget in 7-8. The 55 million that you see there, it was a specific allocation for management information systems, which we were given for implementing the MIS system that FAFA is busy implementing. In 2008, 8-9, as you can see, we had that 12 bar commitment. The big amount there was two outstanding payments from Eastern Cape Social Assistance, and we only got about 11.8 million rollover, despite the fact that we also requested 40.4 million from Treasury. If I can move. This is another challenging picture. This second column there indicates the amounts that we requested from Treasury, which totals to 7 billion rand. Of course, again, the bulk relate to social assistance. You can see the child support grant. We were given adequate there, 2.2 billion. And then we had also an additional allocation of 255 for BASA, despite the fact that we wanted 3.2 billion. The effect of the policy changes is going to be felt, we guess, this year. We're working on the numbers to see that we get the correct budget for. We usually negotiate through the adjustment budget in October, where we project budget overruns. But the bulk of the other issues is quite a challenge because it's the amount, because we have a joint bidding process with provinces. These are the priorities that we identified that needs to be funded. The ECD, for instance, there's a big amount of work around the audit of ECD centers, which will require plus minus between 50 to 60 million to do throughout the country. We also had a human capital strategy that we're developing. I'm just mentioning a few. The mitigation costs are quite minimal, but if you look at what SAFA also has in terms of mitigation, it's quite a little bit of money. I think they were last year, I think, owing about 40 million to the bill for SAFA, I think, on the litigation cost. Masupatsila, we decided to co-fund that with provinces. Provinces are paying for the bulk of that money, but again, we also did not get anything. The only amount that was given was the 10 million, which totals to 30 million over the MTF, that is for the appeals tribunal. We have submitted a detailed business case to the National Treasury, or we will be submitting it 1st July. Yeah, we've prepared that. It has been now approved by ESCO. It's quite an amount that we need to ensure that the establishment is up and running. So the 10 million that has been allocated is really a drop in the ocean. I'm not going to speak a lot there. All I can say is that maybe go to the next slide. Right? These are the earmark allocations. As you can see, the bulk of our budget is earmark funds. It's money that we can't use for other purposes. It's largely transfers to agencies and to other big institutions. The next slide shows you the impact, as I indicated, the impact of the financial crisis. We were given initially in the baseline 86.2 billion rand, and we had to cut the bulk of that. In fact, if you take away social assistance budget, you can see that from whatever is remaining, we had to take a cut of 50.8 million. 37.2 was between SAFA and the NDA. But for us, 12 million on goods and services is a lot of money, given that our budget, you'll see in the next slide, our budget for goods and services is only 229 million, which they cut from 241 million. Given the slide that I showed you earlier on the commitments that are rolling over on a year basis, we're getting to a point where we really strain. One of the biggest challenges is that maybe it's not a challenge, it's a good thing that we have reduced our vacancy rate from 1st of April 2007, it was sitting at around 21%. We've now cut it down to around 10%. So now what is the effect of that is that it's putting pressure on goods and services budget, which is your normal operational budget that you need to do day-to-day job. That was just an additional allocation to SAFA after we had engaged with Treasury on the policy shift. In budget allocations over the years, from 2008-09, I think those bars are clear, growing at about average of 12%. If you look at that, you can see it's a healthy growth, but bearing in mind, again, that I said the most of that money is earmarked funds. All right, that shows our operational budget from last year. I mean, sorry, over the years, and including the MTF years and the growth rate. I think we can move. That's also showing good and services budget. Chairperson, I think I'm moving towards. This is the distribution of the funding. You can see where the bulk of the money is going. We are trying to reduce much from that slice on administration. But this is critical programs that are supporting the implementation of all the programs we are running. One area that we are looking, focusing on now to monitor is the information and technology cost, because of the critical projects that we engage on, like the national information, social information system, as well as the social development management information system. I think we can just show the split between the rollover. Let's go to the second slide. I just wanted to speak to that. This is now the spending for this current financial year up to end of May. Overall, we look okay at 17.97, but you can see the key delivery programs, especially program 3, which is your policy development when welfare services, is already taking a lot of strain in terms of the budget. We will have to take tough decisions in terms of development of funds as to access that program, and I know other programs as well are tighter. So we will say, that's the overview. But this is an important slide. Just go back on that one. These are the budget pressures that I just want to highlight to you. The work that we were doing also at the DRC in terms of the international engagement, we tried to seek funding for that, but we did not win. We have cut down on that work at the moment. But we will give support to DRC in different ways. The litigation costs also that are sitting on us, both on social assistance grant applications as well as the appeals. We also have serious pressure on the infrastructure, especially office accommodation. The establishment of the inspectorate as well as the appeals tribunal is going to cost us a lot of money. The implementation of the famous occupational specific dispensation is also another budget pressure for us. Some provinces have received money for it, but some provinces have indicated that they have serious pressures when it comes to funding. National Department, we definitely have serious pressures. Yes, Chairperson, I think those are the major ones. We are in the process. We are engaging with National Treasury. We have indicated to them all these issues. We're hoping that we might get a positive response in some areas, especially also maybe FAFA, when they present, they will indicate also their pressures. But we have a joint, we've made joint requests to Treasury to really review our baseline so that we can deliver on the key commitments, especially implementing the new legislation, the Children's Act and the Older Persons Act. In fact, now that the Child Justice Bill is now an act of Parliament, it's also putting a lot of pressure for us. Thanks, Chairperson. I hope I can do it.
Thank you very much. Can we have the last slide 19? Thank you very much,
DJ Marinsala and team, can we now open the floor for questions of clarity and the honorable members? I'm going to go with anything you'd like to add. Just before I give over to the members.
Thanks very much. I don't think that there is much to add. I think the CFO has put the context of the financial constraints that you face. That it's not the lack of will to make the resources available necessarily, but rather the environment in which we find ourselves, the world of, that resources are severely constrained. But unfortunately, that impacts on our ability to deliver on the mandate that we've got.
Thank you. Honourable members, the floor is yours. Honourable Member Lamuna.
Thank you, my dear.
Thank you indeed to the Department of Social Development for the presentation. And the conclusion was exactly what I said. And this has been a worrying factor to me for many, many years. Eventually we have reached that point. And I was always suggesting that we provide people with skills. Because I knew that this day was going to come, that this department was going to be hard hit with our, especially with our recent economic crisis, that is now a national problem. And you know, I really want the department to think hard and intensely what we are going to do to alleviate poverty. It will not be by means of grants to our people. We will have to do something, and I would really like to hear from the department if there is any strategy in place to uplift our people, to alleviate poverty, without just focusing on grants. Everybody is not disabled. There are things that we can do to get our people back to work, back to basics, back to provide for themselves, just to give dignity back to our people. It is a worrying factor, and I would like the department to utter in the last the slide actions taken to stay within budget allocation. You know, I've got a list here of so many people, especially in the rural areas, that have applied for grants. Mm-hmm. And at this point in time, I'm waiting for months on end. I've got a list of those people. Is there anything in place, or is there anything that the department intends putting in place that can provide for these people? Because I don't think we will have a solution to this if we do not go to some strategy that can provide something. And then the department has developed and implemented cost-saving measures in order to decrease expenditure. Can you perhaps just tell us more about it? Speak on it and tell us just more what you intend doing to decrease expenditure. The second biggest worry is implementation of legislation, especially with a shortage of social workers. I made a mark here on page 9 on human resources, and I am indeed very worried, because at this point in time we do have social workers that completed their courses, and yet they are not taken up in any position, and we are struggling to implement what we have decided in the legislation. I'll just stop there for the time. Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Member Lamuna. Any other questions? Honourable Member? I think my question is... I would like to place my question to that, to MDA. Why is MDA operating in a very upper level, like a province, not in a district level, because we feel that people experience problems when they want to get to NDA. And again, I would like to know what criteria does NDA use when giving funds to
to the community project and all that. Because very few in the rural areas can say they even know about the NPA. And to the department, I just want to know who is supposed to give the information to the community. Because what is in the document, most of what is in the document, it's the first time for me to hear or what the department is doing for the community. So seemingly there's a problem with the information sharing from the department to the community. I think those are the one. Otherwise, the Department of Social Development, the recommendation is good, you know. We're quite aware of the fact that the department is working very hard, strategizing, preparing the policies, doing everything. But the problem is between the community in our areas, rural areas, in urban settlements, and the department at a national level. So there is a communication breakdown between the community and the department. So what is the department planning to do about that? How are the people going to be aware? Because why are people going to the offices wanting grants, wanting handouts? It's because they are told that there is money. So if the information is clear, they are told, all right, the money is for the needy. Now you cannot even differentiate between the needy and just somebody who just wants grants. That's for fun. And the communities really have been made to depend on grants. They have been made not to work. People who are being returned from the mine, they go back home. You know, you see a 38-year-old man. Oh, I'm coughing, I'm sick. It's just because he doesn't know what to do. So we're saying to the department, if the department and have really, as Honorable Member was saying, plans to change the mindset of our communities, to know that the grants are only for the needy, not just for assistance. We have to be very, 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 very fit and strong so that we can see where the money goes to. When I'm referring to this, to MTA, it's just a disgrace to know that there is fund which has been given to a particular project, and that particular project doesn't exist at all. So it comes to the proper monitoring and evaluation. That's why I was asking what criteria do they use when they're giving funds to the people. And we're also experiencing problems. The National Department of Social Development plans and introduce the policies to the provincial department. You know, I don't push them when I say, if the department is saying, we've got so much money for this project, for home-based care, you know what the social worker is going to do? He's going to look for his or her own people. And yet there are already existing programs done by communities for nothing. And then they make this committee of the health. And then the money goes to their own people. You know, there's a lot that is happening in the deep rural areas. And I think with monitoring, evaluating, and seeing that really, really the money goes to the needy, not just for sweet nothing. We've seen many things happening. We've seen people coming to be the beneficiaries of the social grant. We've seen people, we know these things. We want to assist the department in identifying all these loopholes so that people don't have teams with names Sanda. If the grant is going to a child, it must be a child with blood and soul. Not just a team. So those are the things, the other hand, that the monitoring program has to look at them seriously. But there are those people who are poor, who need these projects. So these are projects which tomorrow the department won't give. money this year, next year, and that year. Thank you. Thank you, Chef.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Gilman. Just to remind you that on the 23rd of June, the NDA will be coming to the committee. So if you reserve those questions for them, and I'm sure that in that meeting you will get greater clarity on the issue. But I think the DG can respond to the issue. Maybe the one issue that you raised around the link between social bonds and the role that it plays in terms of alleviating poverty. And then also maybe just government stance on poverty leverage. Members, any questions? Honourable Member Mabemba.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is rather not a question because questions have been raised, especially on the shortage of social workers, because that is the main. Social workers are very much scarce and it's here and there, and maybe that is why there are some problems on the ground. I want to congratulate the department. Really, it might be in the Northern Cape. At least there is a light that is coming. But also there are some loopholes. As the honourable member has said, that the monitoring is the issue. Because you come to centres, there are so many many mushroom CCD centres, and it's becoming a worrying factor. That's one thing. So I think that monitoring is coming in there. The other problems the members have just highlighted. So mine was just to say, you've done a good job, and let's keep it up. We will all work together, and we'll also, as a committee, members, make sure that we help you where we can. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Member Mabemba. Any other questions, Member? Your colleagues? Mr. Lamola?
Thank you, Minister. I was just thinking that I do have quite a substantial amount of questions, and time is limited. Is it possible to put it in writing to the department?
Yes.
Because I would like to have those answers in writing.
Not a problem.
Thank you. Thank you, Shatasan. I will also give my question in writing. Thank you, teacher.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't suppose I can say that I'll give the answers in writing, so I will have to answer them now. let me start off with the one relating to the improvements we need to bring about in the area of social grant application. I'm sure that Professor will speak to this more in detail. Suffice it to say that the turnaround time for social grant applications has improved remarkably. I'm surprised to hear that there are people who have applied for grants many months ago. I think we would be happy to have the names of these people. May I just say that once anybody, including honorable members, can apply for a grant, not all of us are eligible to get them. So I wouldn't be surprised if a sizable number of the people who will claim that they've applied for grants and are waiting for months and end, some of them are in fact people who are not eligible to get them. But for those who are, in fact, many people, by the time they leave SAFA offices, they already know whether or not their grants are approved. That people still wait for months on end without knowing is quite a surprise to me. But I'm not discounting the possibility that there may be isolated cases like that. With regard to the strategies for upliftment outside our social grant intervention. Let me start off by saying that I think social grants are well known by now to have been government's biggest and most successful poverty alleviation measure. And I don't expect that we can speak disparagingly about them simply because the globe as a whole is facing an economic recession. But nothing should mean that we shouldn't be looking at ways and means of uplifting our people outside our cash transfer programs. But may I say that the primary responsibility of this department is to assist people who are poor in every way possible, including cash transfer. They're not the only means. So what we are doing alongside the cash transfer programs is to work together with beneficiaries of social grants, for example, by linking them up to other opportunities. The Expanded Public Works program, for example, is one area that is targeting people who are able-bodied and are receiving child support grant, for example, on behalf of their children. Those are people who are primarily targeted for employment opportunities. Learnership programs in government, they're also targeting those people. But may I say, finally, perhaps in this regard, that the primary responsibility for creating economic opportunities is not the responsibility of the Department of Social Development, but the responsibilities of other departments in government. If social development were to preoccupy itself with what opportunities do we create other than doing what we're supposed to do, the risk is much greater that we will not be successful at what we are mandated to do. And then we'll be taking on the jobs of other departments trying to do what economic cluster departments are supposed to do by way of creating opportunities for people to gain employment. But we're doing the best we can within the social sector through EPWP to find work opportunities for people. Mm-hmm. And what we've found is that, in fact, in the social sector, the expanded public works jobs that we've created are not short-term. They are long-term jobs. Mm-hmm. In fact, many of them permanent jobs, mm-hmm. as opposed to what you will find in the economic sector through construction jobs and so on that last for a shorter period of time. Mm-hmm. I will defer to the CEO, the CFO, to speak about the austerity measures we've introduced to try and curb expenditure in the department. On the area of social workers, we have a scholarship program, and I think Honorable Lamula would know because we've spoken to the committee before. I'm talking about the committee that she was part of. We have a scholarship program. I think we have 350 million over the NTA. And we have a sizable number of students studying social work. And those that have graduated are continually being placed by the various provinces in the various social work positions that we have in the various provinces. Yes, indeed, social workers are a scarce skill. Social work is a scarce skill in the country. The numbers of social workers that universities can turn out in any one year are less than the numbers we are in fact looking for. So it's a problem that we all are faced with. It's something I'm hoping we can work together on to try and ensure that universities are able to turn enough social workers. But we're trying to also balance the need for more social workers to be turned out and the quality that you get out of universities. There's one thing to say to universities, give us as many social workers as you can, but we find that those social workers can't do the work because they're not properly trained, and we put too much pressure on universities, all they do is just turn out social workers who are not properly trained. So we are working together with them to balance the need for increasing the numbers of social workers with the quality that comes out of universities at the same time. So I don't know whether you want to finish it, but I'm sure that
the
CFO will speak on the austerity.
Thanks, DG, Chairperson, members. There is not much new there. You'll recall that the former Minister of Finance made this quite clear to Parliament, I think 2 years in her session, that departments must start looking at cost-saving measures. What we're focused on, because the nature of our work involves a lot of travelling, whether it's actually monitoring and visiting provinces and projects, we look at our biggest cost driver, and it has been on the S&T as well as local travel, by ensuring that we reduce the number of teams and delegation that goes to visit those projects. Obviously, we also look at other internal creative ways of doing our work. The COO can look at some of the areas around consultancy. We're doing quite a few tasks internally using our own skills. For instance, in certain instances, we set up program management offices internally instead of consulting that work out to external people. Information management and technology is one area that I can mention. We're also looking at setting up internally a program management office that will coordinate all the projects that are running in the department. Lastly, I think we're also setting up our donor coordination strategy. We, as you know, most departments now are struggling these days to get donor funding, but we were fortunate. There are certain areas of our work where there are donor communities that are willing to work with us. When you receive our annual report, you'll see a number of them that we've listed that are currently working with us. But what we are trying to do is to improve coordination, ensuring that we avoid duplication, and also we ensure that we know exactly what provinces as well are doing and what kind of donors are working with provinces. But that is a strategy that we believe is going to help us, especially these days where they tight financial, resources are quite tight. Other measures are really integrity issues around, internal traveling. People have now to, unfortunately, travel economy class instead of business class. But there's a range of other measures that we put in place to try and cut down on costs. Thank you very much.
Thank you. You're welcome. The interview welcome. Thank you. Thank you.
In terms of the budget of the department, I'm sure the committee agrees that having a room for all the different experts, if we would like to see the department getting a fee all the different on the morning of the officials of the Department of Social Development. In terms of the budget pressure, I think we have empathy for the budget pressure that you have, but also looking at the bigger picture and at the financial challenges that everyone is facing all over the world and in South Africa. I think we can take heart for the fact that there haven't been any drastic cuts, especially in the poverty alleviation program. And when you have a time, when you face a recession like we are facing, you have to become creative. So I think the committee is looking forward to the creativity that will be coming forward and the ingenuity that will be coming forward from the Department of Social Development in this challenging time that we are facing. In terms of your clients, you don't have rich clients, but the people you serve are poor people, vulnerable people, people that are struggling to survive every day in our society, in this country. So, in terms of our engagement, I think that is what we're looking at. What I would like to see members of the committee doing is we're going to have a 5-minute body break before we get over to CASA. Especially in terms of honourable members from Service Area, Eastern Cape, Free State, Northern Cape, and also in meeting the heads of SASA of those different provinces, the regional heads, just interacting with them and saying, this is a person from Mposo that you're meeting and interacting with, just to establish a bit of relationship. because that will really help you in assisting with the challenges in the institution. With those remarks, let's have a 5 minute break. Thank you very much. Thank you. Let's have a 5 minute break and back and we'll have a break.
I can't keep everybody's names and stuff. Normally I would get them as people having their tea, but when there's so many like this, and I'm in a way, I don't want to be a nuisance. Now I am a nuisance. No, it doesn't matter. I'll just have to do the best I can.
I know that.
The department hasn't, the committee hasn't had budget, so there's been no food and there's been no food. So I had to stop knowing that. I stopped at the coffee shop this morning and had a very expensive but delicious cup of coffee.
And are
they going to get their budget? But they must have, because they have to buy the beef and that stuff. But the other committees I've done last week didn't have. They're supposed to get on the 25th Sunday.
Thank you. job out there?
It's me who's been sending this thing, because I know your threshold to be 2 million, and I know that this road is no problem. I don't have money to get my phone.
Yeah, I'm
all right then.
Yeah,
I'm all right.
Deputy Minister and Madam Chairperson and members of the committee. Thanks for inviting us to introduce Klaka to the committee. The presentation Madam Chairperson that will be making will cover the overview of social assistance program that we provide and a brief overview of the government decisions since 2004, look at the SASA establishment process, the mandate, vision, mission, strategic objectives and values, and the priorities going forward. What are we planning in terms of the set plan, the budget allocation, which I need to say that we are also as cash strapped as the DSP is, and we'll make some concluding remarks, Madam Chairperson. Maybe before I introduce SASA to the portfolio committee, just to say, Madam Chairperson, we have circulated a draft set plan document for the members, and we also have circulated a background briefing document to the portfolio committee. That's a document briefing, which captures essentially, as a document, an overview of the milestones over the previous MTF period, key challenges, and some highlights. In terms of the strategic issues going forward. And the presentation then won't cover the details of those background issues, but I'll just highlight some of the issues which I think are pertinent in this presentation. Essentially, what we want to provide is an overview of our third plan for 2009-10 to 2011-12, and we'll also highlight some risk associated with the strategic plan and share the plan of action to address those risks. As a first issue, which I need to say, which has also been said by the Director General, is that the social assistance program, which we are responsible for and we are an agent of, aims to reduce poverty and promote social development. And it remains an important program of our society, of our government, to address poverty and destitution in South Africa. We provide coverage mainly for the state old age program, the child support grant, care dependency grant, that is the children's disability program, a grant in aid which is associated with the main disability grant program, just to ensure that those receiving a disability grant can get somebody to assist them, the foster care grant, and the social relief of distress grant. Madam Chairperson, it's important to note that we cover over a quarter of the South African population in terms of this program. The spending projections range between 3.3 and 3.4% of GDP over the MTF period, the previous one. It's a spending which puts us as a country on the upper tier internationally, in terms of spending on the social grant, that's in terms of the World Bank estimate. What we have been pursuing as an agency is the extension of the child support grant, which we have been phasing in until the age of 15 years, which is currently the position. We have been dealing with the establishment of the Social Security Agency, and now we are starting our fourth year of existence. We have been, of course, looking at implementing a new tool in terms of disability assessment, and we have been looking at initiatives to improve the efficiency and effectiveness of the grant administration program, and also, and which is, I think, is the main issue, the age equalization in terms of the state old age program, which the DG has spoken about. I won't deal with this. What is our vision as the agency? Is to provide comprehensive social security service that assists people to be self-sufficient and also to support those in need. Our mission statement is to manage quality social security services effectively and efficiently to eligible and potential beneficiaries. The strategic objective of SASA is to build a high-performance institution which manifests itself by compliance to good governance principles and striving towards operational excellence through continued service delivery improvements to the beneficiaries. Really, the overarching issue is compliance to good governance and operational excellence as a key issue that SASA is gearing up for. We have set as an institution some values above those particular values that we adhere to and subscribe to as an institution. We would want to ensure that through these programs we provide, we aim to support social cohesion, in terms of the families that we serve. We aim to render these services in a transparent way. That means if any person comes, they must know and what are the outcomes and how those outcomes are going to be achieved in terms of the application process, for instance, the issues of equity in terms of service delivery, integrity of our staff becomes an important value. We deal with the most vulnerable groups in society, and also there are issues of confidentiality that are important in the program of that we render. And above all, I think, Madam Chairperson, we have to be customer care centered in our approach to delivering social benefits. We are informed in terms of our work by a number of legislative prescripts or provisions. I won't talk, the Constitution, of course, is an important legislative document that informs our business. Principally, is the Social Assistance, South African Social Security Agency Act of 2004. And the Social Assistance Act of 2004. Those would be the two key main laws that we administer for social benefits. What we have set for ourselves, which I'll give some details in terms of the strategic plan, and also informed
So the presentation is in the exhibit. Are there only like three or four slides of the first from the presentation?
It's only two slides.
Only two slides.
Yes.
Can you look with us in that, please?
There is a presidential strategic plan, 2010 to 2011, in the folder. Yes.
Okay. Well, members, can we fix this afterwards? Let's go ahead with the presentation because it's on the big screen.
Yes.
And then we'll give some a few, like an hour, just to take a picture. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, my apologies for that. The reform agenda for our work is underpinned by three priorities. Firstly, we need to build a customer care centered benefit administration and management system. The second element of informing our step plan is looking at improved organizational capacity. And lastly, we are looking at comprehensive and integrated social security administration and management services. On the first priority, which is customer care-centered benefit administration management, what we are looking at a critical outcome is the implementation of both policy and legislative changes on the child support grant and the age equalization. At the moment, we are on the last year of ensuring that the equalization, especially on the child support grant, on the old age grant, is effective. We also know that, I mean, there are policy issues that have to do with extending and phasing the extension of the child support grant up to the age of 18. The second important element is the development of a beneficiary maintenance framework. What that says is that we have to ensure that those beneficiaries that are in the system, they are properly audited, they are life certified on regular basis, and we can ensure that, I mean, the people that are in the system, we can vouch for. The third element which becomes important as part of our strategic plan is the comprehensive payment management system. Maybe if I could just step back, Madam Chairperson, and just to explain what that entails. Currently, in terms of the payment system or the payment mechanisms that we have got the so-called pool mechanism, where beneficiaries go to pay points to collect their benefits in cash. And we have got also the push mechanism, where monies are loaded into beneficiary accounts and they can draw them at any time during the course of the month. Where we are sitting at this point in time is that over 70% of our beneficiaries get their benefits through the pool mechanism, that is cash, where they go to pay bonds, and only 30% or slightly less than 30% go to the bank. There are fundamental objectives clearly in developing a new payment mechanism that we are looking at. The first objective that becomes important is the cost factor. Cash is very expensive, as you all know, and in looking at how you minimize costs within that environment, of course, we don't only need to look at costs to the agency itself, we also have to look at costs to the beneficiaries themselves, travel costs and other associated costs to go to pay for becomes very important. The second objective is really looking at the risk involved. For cash, you need a lot of security guards, safety in terms of the beneficiaries. It's a host of challenges, really, that are a risk to the beneficiaries and also to the agency as well. The third element which becomes important is related to the dignity question. And those are some of the objectives that are shaping our views in terms of the development of a new payment mechanism. Our view is that, I mean, which is the view that has been articulated, is that we should be moving towards banking the beneficiaries because it serves larger objectives of government, A, making sure that if they are banked, they can at least contribute to a savings culture, and also because they don't throw off that amount of money, at the same time, it accumulates within those communities themselves. So it makes sure that the communities and the economic sustainability within those communities can be achieved. So that's really the broad outlook that we have, but that remains one of the critical issues that we are looking at within the agency, that we need to develop and ensure that there is a new payment mechanism in place. Thirdly, we would want to ensure that, I mean, the questions of disability management and assessment are addressed. Just to expand on that, what we currently have is that despite the fact that there is policy in terms of who are the candidates who are eligible for disability grants, in terms of actual doing the criteria and the tool management of the tool, which is essentially managed by the doctors, there are various interpretations. There are various dislocations from region to region, which makes that, I mean, our assessment is questionable. The other element that becomes important is to deal with customer relationship management. We also want to, which is what is the so-called ICOP, which is Integrated Community Outreach Program Strategy. That is to say, as SASA, we would want to ensure that we go out to the deep rural areas to improve access into the system, but we don't do that only as SASA. We do that with other government departments, social development, health, home affairs, so that as we get to those communities, people can get the essential documents they need. They can also access the government services, and health can provide health interventions. Social development can look at other needs and so on. That's what the approach is, and within that approach, we have got mobile units that go out into rural communities, and that's what we want to enhance and make sure that at least what the members complain that the government reach is not effective, that we can expand on that government reach. There are issues clearly that we'll be looking at to build up a customer care center benefit administration. We need to automate our system so that we can ensure that we have got faster turnaround time and move with the technology. There are interfaces that are important, interfaces with other government departments, which would enhance the credibility of our data, interfaces to Home Affairs, interfaces to UIF, so we can pick up who's double dipping within the government systems as well, interfaces to PESAL, and so on. So those are the interfaces that we think if we implement them, it would assist to modernize the institution of ensuring proper administration. On the second priority area, which is improving organizational capacity, there are a number of outputs which are key for over the medium term. I won't go over all of them, but the last bullet there is important, and the infrastructure that we have for social security administration, I think, is less than desirable. We don't have buildings. We work, especially at the cold phase where beneficiaries come into park homes, and we think is actually one of the recipes where of fraudulent activities. So we need to have, which is an issue, I think it cuts across both SASA social development departments, that the social infrastructure or the infrastructure that we have must be improved quite a lot. There are small issues that we need to build up in terms of improving organizational capacity, the keeping people that are in the system happy, the talent management strategy. integrating our financial system and looking at the whole risk management framework within the organization. We are beginning to move away from the paper-based killing a lot of trees on the records management. We are looking principally in the organization, which is important for efficiency within the organization as a change management strategy. We inherited a lot of officials, 6,000 of them, who were, when SASA was being put up, were integrated into SASA from the old provincial or from the provinces, and we took them as is. And the question is, if you want to improve the organization, you can't keep them where they are. You need to have some kind of mindset, training and capacity building, and rule change management. That, I mean, SASA is not going to be business as usual. So that's an important element in terms of improving our organizational capacity. Madam Chair, I'm skipping some of the elements there, but I think they are self-explanatory. They are small issues that if we don't do them, we won't have a proper functioning organizational capacity. The third element of our priorities is looking at an integrated and comprehensive social security administration and management. Here, what it entails is that, as the DGS already alluded, that SASA is part of the conversation into a comprehensive social security system. The discussions, although they were not embellished around retirement reform, around a number of key social security elements, what SASA has to look and build up is an institutional model which can be ready in line with the legislative mandate to take those initiatives and policy issues when they become reality and make sure that SASA can deliver on them. We are looking at the case management system. What it entails is that a beneficiary who comes to social security and a beneficiary who is accepted within the social benefit system, what it says is that that person is a vulnerable person. Now, the case management system says you don't only give grants, but you look at associated needs of that person. Is that person requiring a health intervention, an educational intervention, or a social development intervention? So we become conduits for those beneficiaries to say, no, what you are receiving this grant, we think that door of government can assist you to find employment. And that's what we mean by case management system. So that if we were getting a child support grant as either a young father or a young mother, you are able-bodied. You can benefit either through public works programs, through training, and so on, so that intergenerationally, you break the whole cycle of poverty and you don't come back into the system. And we think we have got a very big database which takes a quarter of the population of South Africa, which if used properly, it would assist government objectives of ensuring that people can be weaned off from the social benefit program. Madam Chair, those are the three overarching priorities that SASA has set for itself over the medium term. The budget that we have allocated, I think the CFO from the department has spoken about those numbers, and because these are the transfers to households that you are looking at them there. which are growing, currently sitting at 80 billion. Maybe just to go over what we consider in terms of the challenges, I'm trying to save the time, Madam Chair, because I think the DG and the CFO have already spoken about this issue. There is an inadequate funding. We do sit with a situation where the demand is exceeding the available resources that we have. Specifically, and which is also in the stressland, the draft stressland, but we have got 60% vacancy rate in the agency. And I must just amplify that vacancy rate is determined in a way that an SASA is an institution that is being established. And we have set for ourselves, which we have been set at the political level, that we should complete that agency establishment over a 5-year time frame. So we have finished 3 years, and when I'm saying 50%, you can say, I mean, we should be at least 50% vacancy rate. And we are lagging behind because of the resource constraints. That's the main issue that we have. There are delays as a result of finalizing some important projects, and that's a project that the DG alluded to, which is in improved grant application process and the rollout of the management information system within the agency. The IGAP, which is improved grant application process, is the process that enhances and makes sure that the whole process from application to approval are short-circuited, and that's what ensures that, I mean, at the end of the day, we can say, I mean, as an applicant comes, when he or she goes back home, I mean, we can, with all the information we have, say your grant is going to be approved with certainty within a day, so that people, they don't go back home, come back every now and then to check on the progress of the application results. I've already spoken about the high vacancy rate, and also, I mean, as an important issue is the mobile units. These are very expensive to maintain, and we have been grounding some because of the financial constraints that we have within the institution. I've already alluded to the challenges of inadequate infrastructure. We currently share buildings at a local level with social development. And when you go to those communities, you'll find that in one small office, you'll find 10 to 15 officials sitting there. And those conditions are not healthy for any good work environment or behavior. Yes, we still have got challenges about communication, so that people know, I mean, the various grant types, and how to access them and so on. And despite all the efforts that are being made by government, our sense is that, because when you still go to this rural outreach, we'll find very old people. They have never had an ID document, and they don't know how to access the grants and so on. And it worries us why, I mean, despite our communication, there are still such challenges in our society, which means we need to escalate and disseminate communication, not only internally, but also externally, about, I mean, the benefits that government provides. There are problems of lack of real interface with other sources of data. We do have, those sources of data are the Home Affairs database, which would clearly authenticate on real time the beneficiaries of applicants that we have in the system. We rely on some information, hence our whole idea is that we should be building up those interfaces as fast as possible so that we can have credibility of the data that we have within the system. what we are looking at really, I mean, as some issues emanating, I mean, critically, I think, within those priorities, and which we think we need to implement as soon as possible. We are reviewing the whole structure of our organization, and we think over 3 years that we have been operating, it's an appropriate time to look at whether we are appropriately wired to deliver on the money that has been set for the organization. We are dealing with beneficiary migration to the banks and post offices at this point in time, which addresses some of the elements of risk or objective that we have, which is cost minimization. And hopefully, I mean, at least it will give us some open space within the budget. Maybe I need to say, Madam Chairperson, that I mean, the anomaly that we have, if you look at international benchmarks, the cost per beneficiary amount sits in the range of 2 to 4%. That's the actual cost of delivery. In our context, the cost to beneficiary is around 8%, which means it's more than 4 times. And the actual issue is because cost cash handling is very expensive. And that's what we are trying to address within our society, that I mean, at least if we can ban those who are bankable, those who are in urban areas, there is no way, I mean, that those people must just go out to chew a table and creating really problems for the cost of the system. The last two issues, I think they are self-explanatory, I've explained them, is the strengthening of the beneficiary maintenance, benefit verification to minimize fraud. And it's an important issue there, because if you cannot authenticate the people or the beneficiaries that you have in the system, it creates an open-ended and unsustainable system. That's one of the issues that, I mean, clearly has been, especially when you look at the children. There's a lot of funding of children where people clearly in certain areas trade because you can't authenticate those children. And with the new approach that the Home Affairs is coming up with, we think, I mean, that benefit and those verifications will indeed help to cap the fraud within the grant system itself. Madam Chairperson, those three strategic priorities and the action issues which we have put in our third plan, it's our view that, I mean, they really, I mean, are in line and fit to concern the present state of the nation as well. When he says, I quote, social grants remain the most effective form of poverty alleviation. And maybe I need to say, also like the DG, that I mean, our mandate is to ensure, in line with our societal values, that those who are vulnerable and destitute, they don't have the means and they qualify for these grants, they are put into the system to get these grant benefits. It's part of their constitutional application. So I'm an advocate for social security. And I think we should celebrate the fact that through efforts of this government, almost a quarter of the population is being assisted. I must say also an important issue is that, I mean, the limited resources, which are limited resources in terms of administration, they do pose a huge risk for the effective and for the efficient and effective management of service delivery. Of course, as an institution, we endeavor to collaborate with other organs of state to achieve all the planned outputs. I've said we work very closely with as a child of social development, or a daughter or a son, they are responsible to look at the foster care grant for ensuring that the assessments and so on are done. If we don't work closely, therefore, that means those candidates won't be eligible. We have to work close to the justice department, magistrate, to ensure that those people can be legally fostered. And the host of department, if Home Affairs is not available, the whole identity management becomes compromised. I need to say, of course, we have done away with an issue which says if you don't have those documents, you won't be assessed and assisted by the agency. We do assist, but those documents remain an important issue which they need to be obtained to ensure that at least we can cap fraud and we can authenticate and validate the beneficiaries that we have in the system. Otherwise, it becomes a free-for-all. Once we put them in the system, we also help them to ensure that they get the necessary documentation. So working with a number of government departments becomes very important for SASSA's mandate. I would want to say, Madam Chairperson, as SASSA, we really want to pledge our commitment to work with this committee to ensure that we can create a better life for all South Africans. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Makiwani. I'll be just a minute for you to add in. Honourable members, it's my opportunity to ask questions.
I just wanted to my colleague to assist me in page 16 challenges to skills and processes. Just legacy challenges relating, can you just dwell on that and non-compliance? Just jump the track. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. According to the presentation of Ndabe, you talk about the beneficiary maintenance framework. Now, I just wanted to find out how often do you update the beneficiary framework on the system that we have? Because most of the time we find that people who are not even supposed to receive the grant, they keep on the data even if they die even 10 years ago or how many months. How often do you update your beneficiary maintenance scheme? And the other question, you talk about one of your challenges in adequate internal communication process. I was asking myself, like you said, about people who are not in the right document, blah, 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 irrespective of what they try to do. Why can't we work together with other departments, even within the our social development? We do have the community home-based care program. Why can't we utilize the other structures that are already existing to disseminate information to the community? So those are the people who are close to the community, the counselors in the local municipality, those are the people that we need to engage whatever we are doing in the society. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just before if
I hear that question, the last question, why can't we do it?
Why can't we utilize other structures that are already exist
between governments, in all sorts of government, to disseminate information to the community. Honorable Member Lamina.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is a very short one, and mine is back again to the rural areas. In the towns and cities, we have this walk-in, walk-out, one-day program of applying for any grant. Do you have any stats on the rural areas? How long it takes in the rural areas to really access the grant? And are there still problems surrounding the applications of those rural and remote rural areas? I know we're working on mobile. What is the duration of applying for grants by the time that you know that you do qualify?
Thank you, Chairperson. I just wanted to find out from SASA if there's anything that maybe it's in the pipeline that they might do in the case of the child support grant, where the mother is receiving the payment and the payment is actually not being utilized for the benefit of the child, because those kids at the end of the day end up being a problem of the pension of their grandmother's pension.
Thank you very much.
Honorable Nishida.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is on the disability management model. I just want to know if you work together with the doctors, because sometimes we are getting problems where when the people go to renew their disabilities, they don't get that money. Even maybe it's fit to get that money. The doctor will say, no, you are okay. You can go and work. Thank you.
Thank you. I just forgot. Tribunal delays. The impact of tribunal delays on access to grants. Impact of tribunal delays. Once a person applies and is not accepted, they can go to a tribunal to reapply. How does that impact on grants?
The last one say is just that, is there anything that we can do if the girl is getting maintenance from the Department of Justice and also getting the child support grant? Is there any connection between the social development and the court of law? Maybe the girl goes to apply for a maintenance and then she received the money for the child, 500 rand, and go again to social development and get 200 rand. If you can just address that.
Thank you very much. Any other members? I've got a few members that have a few questions. In relation to the staff complement of SASA, in 2005 we saw SASA recruiting in mass is a established new. The CEO said that there's a 60% vacancy rate. But obviously it's a 60% that you cannot afford. Or can you afford to fill those vacancies? Are there funded vacancies or unfunded vacancies? If there are unfunded vacancies, why don't the organization develop an organogram that they can afford instead of one that they wish to afford? That's the one question. The second one is the issue of your roving services, your mobile to, I'm sure, your far-flung areas. Have you explored the partnership that social development has with Transnet in terms of containers for the Transnet Foundation, where you would create some permanency
in terms of site location in your rural areas. We obviously you will have longer hours in terms of services instead of 1 to 2 hours visits a week. And also, have you bought into the multi-purpose center concept of government, which will then make site establishment in the far-flung rural areas much cheaper and more affordable, but at the same time, you'll be bringing much needed services to our rural community. I think what you supplement, but I think it's a question that I'll leave for tomorrow's meeting with the minister. But I think what is, although social security is there, people growth in social security is a good thing, it's a bad thing. I think government should be very bold with that. It should be really more. And then you link your other poverty mediation tools that you have in government. How are they linked to social security in terms of graduates? Is there a plan to graduate families out of social security so that you do not sit with generations of people on social security? If you have 3 generations of people on social security, is it a good thing, is it a bad thing, is it fine, is it acceptable? I think that is the kind of debate that we should have as a committee with the department and the minister and the deputy minister. I think I found the help and I found it quite interesting to see that what it means. But as it is, it's quite interesting. I think the issue is SASA, the system that it operates on is a huge system, so with lots of beneficiaries, and with such a huge system, there will be gremlins in the system, and you will find people that are supposed to be not being there. So I think we should make allowances for that kind of issue, but. Government should also make sure that everyone is qualified to access. And I think the issues of the people qualified, the needs, I think that's the issue that needs to if the CEO can just reflect on that for 1 minute. With the chair back of the committee. I think the other issues we can take up as we unfold the work of the committee. I don't know whether other members would like to ask questions. This Honourable Member Adams, I've noticed Honourable Member Kopana.
Madam Chair, ek wil graag in Afrikaans praat, en het gaan oor prioriteit nummer 1. Waar die aanbieder specifiek gepraat het van die comprehensive payment management system. En dat die gepraat van 2 modules, een pool en een push. Ek wil graag by die SASA aanbieder weet, of hulle die systeme bevorder, vooral met die voordele wat hy gewys het, ten opzichte van die push system. Want ek dink dit kan ook die integriteit van ons mense bevorder as hulle van die push-system gebruik maak, waar hulle bijvoorbeeld die goed in die rekeninge van die beneficiaries betaal word. Ek verstaan dat mense ver bly, maar ons het ook opvoeding gestel, denk ek, as dat en dit kan daar nie help. En dan ook voorzitter, die 60% vacancies. Ons het gehoor in die presidente State of the Nation adres dat daar werk geskep word. Misschien is dit een manier ook van werkskep en met daar natuurlijk daarvoor te groot is. Dank u voor. Honourable Member Adams, it's more common, isn't it? You've made any questions, okay. Honourable Member Kopane.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question is directed to Interfaith Business. Interfaith was reported in some time on the 17th of May that you agreed to approve a transfer of $4.3 million. Allocated for poverty alleviation, or media one was supposed to defend for saying of the chair in society for the pension fund. But you approved that money to be paid for the celebration of our president in the cinema. And this appeared to be a cross abuse of state funds. So you can do that to explain to us to be true. Or maybe it's been trusted to see what happened. Why are we supposed to think in that way?
Okay. I think in terms of the last question, can you just comment on how the matter was resolved, in the way it was reported?
Thanks, Madam Chair. So if there are questions we need, we will do it in writing, if we allow to, Madam Chair. But let me just start, I want to start at the order. I don't want to start with the more ideological policy stroke administration-related question. The question you were asking is, whether growth of social security is a good thing, and also is there a plan to graduate people who are candidates of social security from social security, and you also look at the targeting or ministers arrangement. Maybe, Madam Chair, I mean, if you could allow just a brief remark on that, to put social security in context. Just to say, I mean, from where social security comes from, which is during the industrial period, the beginning of it, it tackled failures from paid work. And the whole philosophical underpinning of it is that those who cannot derive their income from paid work must be assisted by society as a whole. And that's the real philosophical underpinning of social security. And within our context, which is also constitutional context, we are saying that those who cannot help themselves, the state must intervene to protect them. So that, you don't have a society where there are destitute people. So as long as the world paradigm is as is, obviously, there will be growth of social security, and my simplistic sense is that where there's a failure of employment creation, those people need to feed for themselves, and they need to sustain themselves, and they get either through paid work. If there is no paid work, they will get some assistance somewhere, and the state assistance is the critical assistance that becomes important for those families. Internationally, Madam Chair, the graduation from social security is very much tied to creating decent work or work opportunities. That's the plan that the DG was alluding to say, from where we are sitting, our mandate is to address the vulnerable people when they fall through that safety net that there is no employment for themselves. And of course, within that, we also have to be mindful that as we lift them up, which is our core mandate, we need to really refer them to where other government departments could come to play in a big way to assist them so that they don't fall back into the area of into a net which demands that both social development or SAFA intervene. So, and clearly the interventions that the PG spoke about from the services side, the expanded public program, become the main program that we would have to integrate and graduate these people that are within the safety net arrangement. My sense is that, I mean, over and above that, I mean, the referral, I mean, maybe a person to for training, the referral for counseling and a host of interventions that from the service side provides might be the platform which would assist people, just basic information knowing where to get what, would assist them to graduate from the social grant program. Those are the issues that we are looking at, and the department is looking at a number of issues that I know of in terms of welfare to work, which in the long term would assist them. Once we provide welfare, there are interventions to support them to go back to work. The program that we provide within South Africa is not a universal program. That is the social assistance program. It is a targeted program. It's targeted to certain categories, either old age or people with disability or poor, vulnerable families with children. Because we are targeting that, we use in our context a targeting mechanism, which we call the test of the means of those applicants. If they fall below a certain threshold of means test, which I think at the moment is around 24,000 per annum, therefore those people, if they are within those categories identified, they would be assisted. Yes, there is a lot of debate about the errors in targeting, which we know of, and we are mindful, I mean, that I mean, targeting can penalize the poor in terms of coming into the system, either in terms of the documents they need to provide to ensure that they qualify, or what has been called the stigma attached to say I'm poor and so on, and I don't have the means. These are what I have. So, and it also can also lead to people, I mean, those who are having the means also beating the system to get into the social grant program. Those are known errors in terms of the targeting approach, but I think in our context, so far, I mean, looking at the targeting approach, I think it's the best mechanism that we have. It has clearly a lot of people, I mean, it's also the view that we have that they're in the system. But the policy interventions, Madam Chair, that the department is looking at, specifically when you look at the retirement provision, where they're looking at a basic pillar, one retirement reform, which will include those who are on the social grants and those who are able-bodied and earning some income so that they can have a platform, is one element of addressing the means test challenges, especially when you look at adult poverty. But I'm not sure if that can be extended to other categories like the recipients of the child support grant. But I mean, I'm sure that DG can embellish some of the thinking in terms of those issues. Let me come back, Madam Chair. The first question that was raised around legacy challenges relating to the autonomy of the provinces. What we have there is a centralized function. Which is what the function done by the provinces and now centralizing to the agency to coordinate and break the fragmentation. But it's also a function that has to relate to what is being done by the CFS department at the provincial department. And now the alignment is that you align easier with national, as opposed to where you have to link up with the provincial department. And those are the institutional challenges that we feel ought to be addressed. So that in integrating poverty issues and systems, even at a provincial level, you need to use the same kind of common platform. And we think, I mean, those barriers need to be broken if you want to fix people in an integrated way and temper assistance. So that's really the issues that we are looking to, which we see them as impediments. The beneficiary maintenance, which is the second question, I will often reiterate, we do have some thresholds, like certification for old age, is it 1 or 2 years? Once a year, yes, it's once a year. Obviously, for those grants that take less than a year, you would need to ensure, for instance, temporary disability is a 6-month grant. You would want to have that review and that certification earlier, and also to ensure that those candidates come back into the system. What I mean, we do in terms of beneficiary maintenance as well is link it with other databases where we can pick up for people who ought to be reviewed and the time periods in terms of that they're in the system. And of course, what we then do is refer either those cases for those candidates that have overstayed either to a number of organizations that could look whether those people are still eligible to be in the system. I must say it's a labor intensive issue. In other jurisdictions, it would be a physical checkup to the household where you go and check and verify whether those people exist and so on. And whether they are also doing positive things with the benefit they are getting. So in our case, I mean, it really will rely on calls and so on, and really because of the capacity that is not there, you won't do it adequately. But I mean, nonetheless, we do it. We understand the gaps that we have. Yes, on communicating issues, I think the whole stakeholder and partnership becomes important. And I think the government has been saying it cannot do this alone. There is a call, I think, that has been made regularly to NGOs to assist, and most of NGOs are partners within the department and the minister has been meeting with them as well. So that is to ensure that people understand civil society, what we have, and what are the services that we offer, so that they can disseminate the information. Of course, parliamentarians remain an important force in terms of their constraints and outreach, that they carry the message, and other government departments. I spoke about partnership. I mean, a social security official mustn't only learn about social security, but must also understand what home affairs can provide for that person, and what health and transport you can appropriately reflect where it's needed and so on. So there is that utilization, of course, government in these roles and other forums become important about dissemination of the information. Counselors, correct, they're important stakeholders as well. The grant processing in terms of our law is 3 months to process. That's what is legislatively mandated. But as the teacher was alluding to earlier, we have beaten that. We don't think a poor person should wait more than 90 days to get an assistance. Because once you come there, that means you are vulnerable. you need to be assistant immediately. So we do it within 3 days and a day in certain areas, depending on capacity as well, that I was alluding to, because we are at the take-up of the building the organization itself. But let me also say, Madam Chairperson, that I mean, if you are destitute and vulnerable, and you come at the door of SASSA, SASSA won't say go back. You'll be helped after 6 months. There is a grant that government provides, which is called the Social Relief Office, which is an immediate grant that cushions the person immediately. And that's a grant, I mean, at least which begins to fill that time once the application process is taking place, that at least you have got food on the table. So it's a very important program that I mean, people can access, and that I mean, people know about the existence of that program. Mm-hmm. The question of abuse of grants. We have been reviewing this both on international evidence and also on our evidence. It's a difficult issue of social engineering, where if you give a person, then you also mandate to say you shall only do X, Y, Z, and so on. As part of our societal response, yes, I mean, the caregiver must be the ones to really look after the welfare of those children. Otherwise, it gets into a bit of a naked thing. Our own evidence, which I need to say, our own evidence says targeted programs, all of them universally at the margin, there are people who abuse the system. But on the whole, I mean, the program remains a very important pillar of society. So we cannot kill a good program because at the margin there are those people who are abusing the system. Yes, society must deal with it. NGOs, ourselves, when we see people buying alcohol and also other perverse incentives, the so-called teenage pregnancy issues and so on, we must address that as part of the plan. So it becomes important that, I mean, that way all other societal interventions become important to come to play. I don't know whether DG have got the latest in terms of abuse and so on, but I mean, that's what I would say. That, I mean, it's very much now. We know it exists, but no matter where you go, you'll find, at least in any society, some people think, yes, I mean, we know they do have the bit of teenage pregnancy here and so on, but looking at the whole program on the whole, we know, I mean, in terms of schooling, we know in terms of food and nutrition within those households, and looking at the social impact of the program, that there is a more benefit than you would say at the margin there are perverse incentives that we have. Impact of the tribunal and its impact on the ground, did the issue of the interface of the state maintenance grant and the CSG. The maintenance program and the child support grant. It's a question, these systems are not integrated. And that's where the worry is. And that's why we have pushed that. Because we would want to test if a child is getting different, what other benefits are needed that can come to play. That's why we have put the building of these interfaces of the system as an important reason. Because we need to know that child gets some support from government, just nutrition programs or other uniforms, get other support, and the family gets another support. We can build a profile. That's what case management is all about. At the moment, we don't have that system, so we would rely on people declaring as part of their income. yes, where we build up interfaces with tech and if we fund them, then they pay some into the space. Yes, we have tried the issues of other government departments, public works, the Transnet, and those processes are ongoing. But, I mean, they don't feel the need to build adequate infrastructure which is suitable for the benefit, for the applicants that come to our services. I would say, I mean, our infrastructure requirements really are enormous, Madam Chair. The depots that we have, I need to contextualize that we were given a blueprint for social security establishment with a minimum requirement, which was seen to be the capacity that SASA needs to have when it's adequate, to fill, to be able to deliver on its mandate. But the budget that we have is not matching what we were given. So that is juncture, it remains unfunded unless we come with a new organizational review and structure that we have. So they are not funded. they are not there, but they are there in terms of what cabinet determines to be the adequate minimum positions that we need to fill. And part of the review will touch on that, because we need to advise if not funding those positions, what does it do to service delivery issues. Only one question and that's all.
I'm sure I thought of the question I'm certain all of you remember from the DA considered absolutely important for the CEO to deal with before I come up there.
Wow.
The question related to the impact of the tribunal, and its impact on the grant administration system. That was the question. That was it. How these tribunals work and how they impact on the grant system, if I understand the question.
Let me give
you that. No, I'll give the transition.
Oh, okay.
No, there was a question about the tribunal, their impact.
The other issue that matters public importance.
Yeah.
Okay.
Will you conclude on that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. The issue of the appeals tribunal, the tribunal are a new innovation. We are busy setting the tribunal up. But in the meantime, we have one central tribunal in Pretoria, which travels to various provinces to deal with various appeal matters. From applicants in the public group, we have been given the opportunity to set these mechanisms up. We've interacted with the various courts where these matters are pending. We're doing the best we can to catch up with the backlog of the appeal cases. But the tribunals that we currently have made some real strides. There's no denying the fact that whilst the appeals are pending, probably may be facing some hardship. Which is why we're trying to speed up the finalization of these appeals. But these would be appeals by people whose applications have been turned down by SASA. and very seldom does it happen in fact that SASA is found not to have acted properly in to 9 o'clock. But there are instances where SAFA is found to have denied the grant, perhaps based on inadequate information. And once that information is made available, the appeals are upheld. So there is indeed an impact on the access to the benefits while people are waiting for the appeals to be finalized. And our view is that in appropriate circumstances, people who are facing distress, because often what you find is people who apply for grants, I would say that more than 90% of these appeals relate to disability. And it's not any disability that qualifies you to get a disability grant. If you don't have one arm, you are relatively disabled to a person of two. But that doesn't prevent you from entering the labor market. You could go to a doctor would say to you, you don't qualify for the job. Or in fact, would give you the necessary documentation. You go to SAFA, SAFA makes a determination that you are not eligible. Then you appeal to the national department in the form of the tribunal. So it's not all cases where people have necessarily appealed that would be upheld. But there would be instances where people are truly facing hardship, even if they don't qualify for this other grant, such as a disability grant. But the program that Mr. McGuan has spoken about, social relief of distress, which is something that provides temporary respite to people facing hardship, that kind of grant can remain available to them.
Thank you. Just a follow-up, DG, on what you explained to us, and I clearly understand. Epilepsy, is that also a form of disability? Again, I'm asking this because those people suffering from epilepsy always come from the disadvantage or the poor group. And these people are on constant medication many times. But they cannot take medication if they do not eat properly. Otherwise, they do get this fit or whatever. And many times we find that people do not want to employ these people, seeing that it's the risk is then on the employer if these people, if anything do happen during the working period for these people. Is epilepsy then covered as a disability, or how do you go about that? And I know, and I think you also know that this came up in our committee many times, if you find that some of these people are still on top of it. Thank you.
Thanks very much. But, our current definition of disability would not cover epilepsy. They would not even cover HIV or any chronic illness, which would not fall within the definition of physical or other forms of disability that prevents a person from entering the labor market in order to end the labor for itself. We have been asked to look at a separate dispensation on chronic illnesses. Because in themselves, they're not necessarily disabilities, but they do impact on people in a particular way. So it's a long policy, it's a long drawn out policy debate that we're working on. It features prominently even in bodies such as SANAC in relation to people living with HIV. So that being the case, I would say that we will continue to interact with the committee on how far advanced the policy debates are before a dispensation related to chronic illnesses can be finalized. At this point in time, a person with epilepsy would not qualify purely on the basis of their epilepsy, unless medically the doctor can make a determination that this person
is unable to enter the labor market on the basis of the condition they have. So it is primarily a medical choice and not a social choice. In fact, it partly answers the question that was raised about whether we work with doctors or not in relation to this matter. Doctors make that assessment independently of social care and indicate whether or not this person is disabled. Sometimes it does say this person is disabled, but their disability is 40%. That 40% does not qualify the person to get a disability.
Madam, yes, thanks. Just on the last question that was raised, I would want to indicate, Madam Chair, that the assertion that public funds were used is not correct, which then the Honourable Member wanted to know whether that's correct or not. Let me just put it for the record. That, I mean, what I'm not answering the articles on the paper, but the companies that work with us, they do set up their own private fund, social responsibility fund, which they support the constituency we deal with, either children or people with disability or old age people. And it's always understood that it's a private-to-private which we, as an organ of state, we can socially coerce them to support those desirable issues within our communities. And the funds that were used were private to private. They were not part of the voted funds of government, and neither were public funds spent for any to support any person. Those funds were earmarked by those companies to support children, not to support a function. And that is not only that function, but in a number of instances, our organizations where there are functions organized, it is the elderly function and so on, to provide assistance through this private initiative for either to complement those without using the money that is derived from the fiscal. Okay.
Members, we've exhausted our time. I think we have some questions there that we need to attend to. So thank you very much, the Department of Social Development, for your time. We will be meeting the Minister tomorrow as the committee. And obviously also the Deputy Minister and the Accounting Office of Social Development, SASA and the NGA will be joining us. We will also be having another meeting on the 23rd. But could I please urge members by Friday to please submit your questions to the committee secretary, that we can forward into the department, and we will then conclude our business on the 23rd of June. Thank you very much.